ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the most famous words in motorsports with your host, Lugs and the Gas Man. Ladies and gentlemen, start your podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Wrecking and Racing. This is Lugs with a special co-host today.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Sokka is here again instead of the Gas Man.
Yeah, stepping in for the Gas Man. He's got something going on tonight, so he couldn't partake, but that's all right. We've got you in here. This is what, fourth time back now?
Let's see. I had Talladega, and then going into the, we picked our bracket. So this will be my third time, okay. I think, for the podcast. So.
Okay. Cool. Well, nonetheless, glad to have you back.
Yep, it's good to be back, and thoughts out to the Gas Man doing his adult things, whatever he is doing.
Yeah, man, a very, very big news day. You picked the
this
right.
This is the perfect, perfect time because there's absolutely nothing at all to talk about. He lied. Probably the biggest week in news in NASCAR this season.
Exactly,
period.
Exactly. That's chatted with the Gas Man a little bit earlier today, and we were saying the same thing. So he took a nice night off to relax his lungs or whatever he's doing there.
And speaking of relaxing, fans, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the Wrecking and Racing podcast. Catch us at Wrecking and Racing. Well, catch Lugs and the Gas Man at wreckingandracing.com, Twitter at Wrecking and Racing, Facebook.com/ Wrecking and Racing, and also Gmail. What is your guys' Gmail?
WreckingRacing@gmail.com.
WreckingandRacing@gmail.com. So please send questions, send thoughts, send concerns. And I'm sure you all will have something to talk about after this week in some form or another.
Yeah, thanks for all the plugs. You did it all for me. I thought I was going to have to do that this week, so thank you.
I'm a devout listener.
Yeah, so, again, thanks to the fans for listening. We mentioned this last week, but this current week that we're in that we're kind of recapping is been phenomenal on Facebook and Twitter and all the engagement and the likes and shares. So again, thanks fans. This has probably been one of the most popular weeks we've had on social media. So
that's good to hear. Good to hear you guys plugging away, being the small time creators that we are. You get your core audience, and it's tough to get over that bump.
It is. It's taken a long time, but we're slowly getting there. So.
And guests contribute to that. You guys have had some great guests, great conversations, and even nice enough to bring the fans on the podcast as well. Not just me, but, you know, fans from all around the country. So
yeah. Before we go any further, I do want to take a moment to crack open my beverage for the evening. It is not the official
beer of NASCAR
tonight, unfortunately. I've switched it up, went with a Monster Energy.
And I am supporting the Hendrick Motorsports with Chase Elliott with a Mountain Dew. Well, that was anticlimactic. It was
supposed to fizz. There,
you go.
Yeah, so.
And fans, tell us what you're drinking at home.
Definitely. All right, so where to start? I guess we'll start with Texas, obviously.
Yeah, we can start with Texas. Texas happened before all the news this week.
Yeah,
so
we'll recap the race, and then we'll go into the big news today, which I'm sure you've probably heard of at this point if you're just now listening to this, but
you haven't heard our thoughts and feelings.
Exactly.
So here we go.
Exactly. Hold on, buckle up. So the big big first thing to get out of the way is Harvick won Texas.
Harvick did, as expected.
Very dominant car. And not to give away what the later news is, but
maybe too good.
We're going to find out. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe a bit too good.
A little too good. Yeah. So head and shoulders, and my notes here, I'll preface this episode here by saying most of my notes were before I found out about today's penalties. So
we were both at work whenever the news came in, and definitely took us by surprise, I would think.
Yeah, so my notes, I had, you know, noted to say, yeah, he had the best car, and you know, no one could really hang with him, and
that last restart was just incredible.
Yeah,
I was watching it at home, and it's like, you know, does the bottom have a shot? And when Harvick just took off, I was like, that is incredible.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Like 40 more horsepower just out of nowhere, man.
It's what it looked like. Yeah,
the restart before wasn't as dominant from Harvick. They were side by side, and it was tough to clear off a turn two. That's where we saw a lot of battles is clearing two.
Yeah.
But Harvick had no problem. He cleared in one and said, watch me go through turn two 40 miles an hour faster than you schmuck. So incredible.
Yeah. And that was the first time restarting on the outside. So Lord knows what it could have been if he had picked that earlier on the restarts. But
indeed.
Nonetheless, when they started out the race, there was a little bit of contact between Bowyer and Hamlin. That was kind of surprising to me. I mean,
lap one, turn one.
Yeah, lap one, turn one. We knew there was going to be kind of a lack of grip, and there was a new...
The tire was the big question mark.
Yeah, there was
a new tire. Harder tire for tire wear, of course. And if you've been following the sport a while, you know that harder compounds equal less grip. That's why we see Formula One with multiple compounds of tire. And when you want to go fast, you put on ultras. But if you want to go long term, you put on hards. And, you know, NASCAR brought their version of the hard tire.
Mm-hmm.
And rain the night before.
Yeah, washed
the rubber off. So much like the inaugural Texas race that Jeff Burton ended up winning, lap one, turn one in Texas was a big question mark. Not as big as 99, but big for Hamlin and Bowyer for sure.
Yeah, so they pretty much start out in the hole. Bowyer and Hamlin went a couple laps down there. Bowyer was never really able to bounce back from that, and ultimately he paid the price for points in the championship standings currently. What about any other takeaways you have that comes to your mind here?
About Texas in general?
Yeah, the racing as it unfolded.
Racing itself was pretty Texas typical. The Texas T onslaught of penalties. I mean, you know, if this was a hockey game, there'd be no one left to play, because everyone would be in the box.
Yeah, you know, I saw there was a lot of negative feedback on Twitter. Eddie Gossage was basically getting slaughtered on Twitter, and I don't understand that.
No, the track owner is not responsible for your drivers and the...
Not only that, I mean, it's a freshly repaved track, right? Mm-hmm. They had to repave it because previously it was holding water for 3 days, and they couldn't get the races in, so... You know, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Before, whenever they had the, you know, very porous track that was holding all this water, all the tracks were attacking, or all the fans were attacking Eddie, saying, you need to repave it.
Do a repave.
This is ridiculous. And then now he repaves it, and then they're chastising him about the racing product.
It's sort of that Atlanta deal where if you have a mile and a half, you want old character. You want bumps and all that other stuff. And Eddie Gossage went a step beyond and lowered the banking in turns one and two, making both ends of the racetrack completely different. And for a mile and a half, you could almost cut it symmetrically from start finish line through the backstretch and say, turn two is turn three, turn four is turn one. And now at Texas, it's almost, I wouldn't say road course like, but it's tough to set up Pocono like, perhaps
completely
to get
different, or which, even Darlington,
which turn are you setting up for?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'm all about challenges for the crew chiefs and the engineers. Like, they're the best of the best. Let's see what they can do with a car.
Yeah, and Harvick certainly
did. And they sure did, and we will get to that for sure. But we saw speeding penalties. We saw Martin Truex cut a pit box, and they didn't show how much he cut the third pit stall by.
Mm-hmm.
I was, because of this, the new system with the cameras, every pit stall is marked down to the millimeter. And if a tire touches that line, even by a skosh, red flags fly. And I don't have a problem with penalizing Truex. Even if his tire was an inch on that fourth pit box, the rule states you can't be in more than three stalls ahead.
Right. Who was it that came in for fuel only? And one of the pit
crews...
That
was Bowyer.
Okay.
That was Bowyer. Yeah. His day just kept getting better.
Came in for gas. Just need the one crew member... And there was a team member that was just sitting on the pit road wall with his feet on the pit box.
And that is unacceptable. They deserve to be penalized. And I will stick up for NASCAR every step of the way when it comes to that, because in my day job, it's my job to read rules and expect people to follow those
comply,
rules.
Yes.
Where we run into the most trouble with everyone is wishy-washy rules. Mm-hmm. Rules that said, well, in certain circumstances or things like that. It's much easier to enforce a hard-line rule that says a pit crew member cannot have their feet on the deck when the car is more than three stalls away. So if you got, you know, out to lunch Billy Bob dangling his feet on the concrete on the pit stall, when Bowyer comes on pit road and he starts that timing line, you know, That's on them.
Yeah.
All on them.
And I bet that team member felt pretty silly afterwards.
Indeed.
Just brain fart or whatever it was. I'm sure he felt pretty bad.
Well, once again, it could be like the interpretation of the rules. Maybe the teams are under the impression that only those who are servicing the car can't be over the wall before three stalls in. So
yeah, true.
That, you know, the NASCAR rule book is very thick, and they're expected to know a lot. Mm-hmm, and that's where the pressure comes in. But, you know, a lack of judgment, you get penalized.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, kind of fast forward, you know, I'm not going to lie and sugarcoat it. The race, there were some lull moments
there
of
were.
Racing. You really had to get on somebody's bumper in order to be able to take the air off and have them slide up the track and move by. But if you weren't in that position, you're just basically out there riding until that possibility arises, essentially. But even in some situations, you saw Kyle Busch. Remember when Kyle Busch was trying to get up to Bubba? And, man, he was, like, right there so many times. But I don't know if Bubba's car was just working well at that time. But his car did not leave that white line. I was kind of impressed.
Yeah.
In that situation,
I think NBC did a very good job showing the aerodynamic disadvantage of being outside the bubble. Mm-hmm. Essentially, there's that pocket of air that if you are on their bumper, you can stay there and get the car in front of you loose. But if you are a foot out of that bubble, you are washing up the track. And Kyle Larson learned the hard way that if you are trying to press the attack and you are not securely in that bubble, you're washing up. So, you know, good on Dale Jr. and Jeff Burton for calling that out and saying, watch aerodynamics in play.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Other takeaway was towards the end of the race, whenever Almirola was trying to pass Logano.
He's already in. Yeah. Boo, so
let's talk about that for a minute. That was ridiculous.
It is. And it goes back to what Jeff Burton was screaming since NBC took over. You are racing.
Exactly.
You are racing, man. It's if your car is equal, it comes down to the driver. And the driver has a lot of tricks in their toolbox that they can use to make a pass, including pinching them down or not giving them the line off.
Yeah. And saying he's already won a race, like...
Is Logano Almirola's teammate? Does Joey Logano owe Eric Almirola anything at all? No, he doesn't.
No one owes anybody.
Nobody
anything.
Owes anything. Even if that was Kurt Busch, and we saw Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick earlier this season.
Yeah.
Oh, he's my teammate. Oh, see if I cut him a break 4-time chump. Like, I don't know. I don't know where this sense of entitlement is coming from this year about. I mean, we're not in the car and we don't see the gentleman's agreements established throughout the season.
And I remember, I think that was actually at maybe Phoenix earlier this year. Maybe it was Vegas.
It was Vegas. Vegas.
And it was for stage win.
It was stage win.
Nonetheless, I mean, the race car drivers, suck it up, Buttercup.
Yep. So this isn't Formula One. You're not going to get team orders to let anybody buy. I mean, you go.
Yeah, and Almirola came out. He didn't ever really say, hey, I was in the wrong, or hey, I shouldn't have said that. But he did say he spoke to Logano, and they are good.
Yeah.
And quote-unquote, they are going to exchange Christmas cards.
So. Well, at least there's that. Thanksgiving, they, you know,
I think,
too close for Thanksgiving.
I think after Almirola saw the tape and could go back, he kind of probably... stuck his foot in his
mouth. Yeah, that was the general consensus on Twitter I saw. Is like, you should really wait.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Take
it's the heat of the moment. It is, happens,
I
guess, but.
And that's what NASCAR is best at, is sticking a microphone in someone's face right after a crash.
Oh yeah,
or right
get
after
that,
something
get
bad
that,
happened, or
get that raw emotion
right after your year is done and you're possibly have a ride next year. How you feeling?
Yeah.
Well, terrible, you jerk. Thanks.
Yeah. So, and then. As far as finishes go, any takeaways there? Any surprises? Anything?
Not too awful much. We expected those to be fast. Were fast.
Austin Dillon came home 10th.
Did
That's
he?
Kind of a kudos to him.
Yep.
I do want to highlight our picks for last week. Before we do that, did you have anybody pick?
No, not for Texas.
Okay. So the gas man, he did have Harvick selected as the winner.
Yes.
So kudos to Mr. Gasman for selecting that. He also had Johnson selected as his dark horse, who came home 15th. And then I had Truex and Hamlin. Jones. Truex and Jones.
Yeah, very, very good run for Jones.
So technically, I had a better finishing average than the Gasman.
And Gasman got the win.
But he got the win. But now, you know, we're hearing about this penalty coming out today.
Right, so is really... the Gasman docked points here?
Yeah, I think he should be. You know?
I'm sure if he was here...
He'll argue his case next
his
week,
his soapbox
sure.
would be so big that the Titanic could slide into that with plenty of clearance, I tell you.
Parallel parking it, yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure he'll make his case next week, but that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it.
Right.
So going on a little bit more on Texas here, Keselowski tweeted, this could be the last time that we see a 200-mile-an-hour
yep.
plus race car and qualifying trim.
Mm-hmm.
So with the new rules package that's coming out next year, we may not see the cars even get close to 200 miles an hour in qualifying.
Yeah, by themselves, it may be a foot to the floor, Talladega style
exactly.
qualifying, and everyone's
exactly.
within a tenth or two, but they're all not over 200.
Yeah, so interesting takeaway there. One other piece is the big flub by NASCAR on Jimmy Johnson.
That was sad to hear.
Yeah, tell us about that if you know.
He failed pre-race inspection twice. Mm-hmm. So the rule is if you fail a third time, you go to the back.
Yes.
The communication did not get to the tower until 15 minutes before the green flag. So I believe as Jimmy Johnson was rolling off pit road, Chad Knaus was told by NASCAR that they're starting in the back. Or was it that they made the mistake?
They didn't know of the mistake until after
the race started. So Chad didn't know he was going to the back until 15 minutes before the race.
Exactly.
And then the whole time wondering why, and then all of a sudden NASCAR said, yeah, that was our mistake. And like NASCAR said, they can't fix it during a race because the event has already taken place, and you can't say, well, Jimmy Johnson would have been here if he wasn't put back. And, I mean, Johnson's year, that just... screams Johnson's year
in
a nutshell.
Exactly. It goes along exactly what that team has been battling all year. So it sucks for that team.
Mm.
But yeah, basically, and Knaus said it, like, you know, there's no system. There's no way to contest those calls. They're basically like the voice of God. When they come down, then you go to the back. You don't get to argue it. There's no system or chain of command where you can argue it. But you just take it, and then after the fact... you learn about what the situation really is. And at this point, the race was already started. There was nothing they could do.
And that's the thing that NASCAR did is they waited until the event started, basically started to hand this down instead of, you know, I'm thinking about how logistically a race weekend would work. And I would think there would be a NASCAR official there with a clipboard. And he has three tallies. And he says, one and two, three. Three, you go to the back. And that is handed to NASCAR before the event.
Right.
So where is this communication breakdown? Or is it just someone in the tower heard? Like, who was that official in the dark room
Absolutely.
That was keeping track of that?
Mm-hmm.
And why does he have a job now?
Yeah,
and why don't I have that job? Because I can certainly make three tick marks on a piece of paper.
Yeah, good point. They said they are reviewing the whole... way that unfolds, and they're going to be looking at that. So I think it's going to be a huge learning lesson for NASCAR. They definitely are already self-reflecting on it, which is good. But I can't believe that it actually was allowed to happen in the first place.
I don't want to put words in NASCAR's mouth, and I don't know how the software works on the back end for this. But say Jimmy's car was in there, and with this new system, if the computer model flashes red in any part, it's deemed illegal. Maybe on the third time, there was just a blip, a quarter of a second, millisecond, that the car was not legal until the machines calibrated themselves or perhaps realigned themselves, and he was good, but the official in the box did not see that little ping. Maybe the software didn't communicate to that official clearly that this car did fail just a moment ago, but now it's good. So if it's an automated system that's just counting failures, mm-hmm. they would look at that and say, failure. When he made it. Now,
who knows?
That's complete, you know, speculation off the wall. But as, you know, a computer guy, that's how I think it would play out. And I'm trying to defend NASCAR as best I can here because other than that, it's indefensible.
Mm-hmm. So that leaves us basically one race to go until we get to Homestead.
It's a cutoff.
So we'll go over standings now, okay. I guess, and kind of map that out. So prior to today, that was going to lock Mr. Harvick into a homestead position along with Joey Logano.
And while you get those updated standings, I'll fill in the fans. So Kevin Harvick was found to be in violation and got a, an L1 penalty?
Yes, the highest.
The highest that you can. It's a, the window is a 5 to 30 lap dock, and they decided to push the maximum 30 point dock.
40 points.
The win no longer counts as a lock. So if Harvick cannot start the race on Phoenix or gets taken out on lap one, guess who doesn't get to go to Miami?
Right.
And it was for a spoiler, which there are certain areas in the car that crew chiefs know you do not touch for any reason. Tires being one, spoiler being another, splitter being another. So those key areas are provided to the teams by NASCAR, by an impartial party, and placed on the car because, you know, they're official. Mm-hmm. They're pre-designed, and NASCAR did not divulge what was wrong with the spoiler as to not give teams the thought that they could get that advantage next week or manipulate that advantage in some way. But
yeah, so their exact verbiage in the press release was not used as supplied from the manufacturer and not altered.
So they cooked their T-bone steak on it over the weekend. They used it as a grill and
something. So
something.
To further elaborate on the penalty, not only that, I mean, the points is a huge issue, right? And the win being taken away from a homestead playoff. But Rodney Childers,
right,
and the car chief are suspended for the next two races,
which coincide with the last two races of the season, which, you know, if you're following along at home, 2 minus 2 is 0. Rodney Childers will not be at the track this year.
Right. Tony Gibson, right before we started the podcast, they said Tony Gibson is stepping in.
Tony Gibson will fill in.
So we know he's got the experience, and the team's probably still going to be all right and contend.
And
for
I'm
that
sure
win.
Rodney Childers has everything set for those two races.
Absolutely.
And I was hearing that the Homestead cars are already submitted to NASCAR.
Oh, really?
Well, I guess for all 8 teams, just in case there's a Hail Mary moment and, you know, someone could win their way in.
And that begs the question, because there was 2 other cars that were penalized as well.
Now, the top 3 were all penalized, found in violation of something, and not all the same thing.
Well, Blaney was one, and then Logano was...
Logano was clean?
His car was not taken. His car was not taken. So he finished 3rd.
Mm.
And I'm drawing a blank on who the 3rd driver was, but those 3 cars, quote unquote, random selections, failed. So they were hit with penalties as well. But begs the question: should all the cars be subjected to R&D? At least the cars in the chase or in the playoffs?
Yeah, where it matters, definitely. And I was milling over this in my head as soon as I heard that Harvick was penalized and this affects the championship. I was thinking, you know, is the system broken? Do we need to fix something? It would be easy for NASCAR to go to the extremes and say that every car or every race is an impound, and you submit your cars to NASCAR the week before for that week, and you don't touch them. You can only adjust minor things. That's the extreme one way where you're absolutely sure that no rules are broken, but it doesn't give a whole lot of room for the crew chief and the engineers to experiment or innovate.
Mm-hmm.
The other is the Wild West. You just bring a car that fits the template and what they got going on geometry-wise underneath, let them have it, which would be you're seeing the crab walks again, and you're seeing the T-Rex car again, and you're seeing some really one-sided racing. So for everyone thinking we need to do something about this, really what can you do besides either thoroughly inspect all cars and just be happy and content with penalties being handed 2 or 3 weeks after the fact, because that takes some time to strip down a car to its bare bones.
Exactly.
And look at every single part.
And that's why we're hearing about this Wednesday, you know, when the cars are probably halfway across the country to Phoenix now for the next race.
Yep.
We're hearing about this on a Wednesday.
Yep. Haulers are already parked, and they're like, drivers are there. They're getting ready to practice. And now to be told that, you know, it's a tough deal.
So, I mean, I hate it, but from a consistency standpoint, yeah. I mean, I think all the cars need to be subjected to the R&D center. So expedite the process, bring the R&D center to the to the track. I don't know, but yeah, something's got to be fixed here, because what about the other, you know, cars that were are in the playoffs that were not torn apart and searched and
right? So I mean,
obviously they didn't win the race, so.
What they did wasn't enough to make NASCAR have a big exclamation point over their head and said, that car is probably illegal. So they're just massaging a little bit. You know, it's that fine line, and some will say that's an integral part of the sport, to massage the cars to the point where they're at the rule, and if they went a little bit over, NASCAR might not catch it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're always going to push the envelope.
Yep.
And
gamesmanship will always be
in the gray area. Exactly. That's with any sport, any competitiveness. But so yeah, let's now we'll kind of recap what the standings were before and what they are look like now. All right. So the points. So before the penalty, Kyle Busch was 28 points out, and Truex was 25 points up. Sorry, 28 points up for Kyle Busch and 25 points up for Truex. And then below the cut line was Kurt Busch minus 25, Elliott minus 39, Almirola minus 57, and Bowyer minus 73. Now with the penalties announced, kicks Harvick out of Homestead for the time being. He's not a lock anymore. So Kyle and Martin are still 28 and 25 up. Harvick's only three to the good. Kurt Busch, three out. So they can flip-flop so easily.
And we were just talking about Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick and teammates and disagreeing. Yeah. It may get higher than Phoenix.
Maybe some payback there. Chase is now only 17 points out. That's manageable.
Could be done.
Couple stage wins. We know how good he is at Phoenix.
Could be done.
Almirola's 35 and Bowyer's 51. You know,
must
those
win.
Guys are still must win. But how weird is it? Because everyone, well, not everyone. Some people were saying like, oh, SHR, they're going to put all four cars at Homestead. And now there's a potential they might not get any of the cars.
That would be insanity.
Yeah, they all made it to the round of eight and then maybe all four eliminated going into the round of Homestead. So
yep.
Very, very interesting stuff. Obviously the upset here would be is if someone outside the top four currently wins, obviously only two are going to advance on points.
Yeah. Harvick's got to beat Busch by three, or he cannot be three positions behind Busch any more than three positions behind Kurt. If an outsider were to come in, a spoiler,
well, Harvick would still be, he's got to catch Truex or Busch.
No, he's still in, but he's ahead of Kurt by three.
Yeah, but I'm saying if someone from the bottom four wins, then he's going to be eliminated. So
yep.
Truex and Busch would advance.
If Chase were to pull it off.
Exactly.
And that would throw, you know, Harvick out.
Only two are going to advance on points, essentially. So,
man.
Yeah, it's Phoenix is going to be nuts. So, on that note, they changed the layout of the track.
It's not the track itself. ISM Raceway now, and they thought to change it up a bit. Very unique layout now. Turn two.
I'm going to see if you get this right, because I've gone cross-eyed trying to think about it in my mind.
Right, so don't mean to plug the channel, but if you catch my NASCAR Racing 2003 series event on Thursday, I'll point out exactly where the start-finish line is from a driver's perspective, but it is no longer on what we think of as the front stretch or thought of as the front stretch. They'll go down the straight part of the track. They'll go through NASCAR old turns one and two, and right after
turn two
and before the dogleg kink to the left, they've placed the start-finish line. So pit road is going to
be on a curve.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be on a curve.
Yep. So it's that 200 foot or whatever it is that's straight. So you exit two, you get out to that little wall, and then you have to turn again into the dog lake. Right there is where the start finish line is. Think of like Talladega. I guess that's sort of a good way to think of it. Talladega, you leave the trioval and you hit it on the flat or the straight part. Mm-hmm. That's where it is in Phoenix now. So that puts a lot more emphasis on pit stops, because the line is right there, and that could make or break your race.
Well, not only that, man, but think about, you know, in a normal Phoenix race, how they span out and they go through that dog leg five
there
wide.
Is no out of bounds at
exactly.
Phoenix.
There's no yellow line there. So restarts are going to be chaotic, diving down into turn one.
I'm
this is the most excited I've ever been for a Phoenix race.
Do they call the the dog leg turn one. I don't think they would. It would just be probably the dog leg still.
Yeah.
But when they go into the old turn three, they may be four or five wide.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if someone doesn't get going right in front of you, you want to jump out of line after the start-finish line, and the guy behind you has a bigger run than you have on the guy in front of him, and it's Pocono all over again.
Right. Yeah, so I'm very excited. I mean, the most excited I've been for Phoenix, I think, maybe ever. It's going to be pretty crazy, I think.
It will. And, you know, it's a Harvick style racetrack, so Kevin might not be sweating bullets yet, but we've seen what happened to Jimmy Johnson when he needed a good run, and everyone's like, Phoenix is Jimmy's race. He blows the tire exiting turn four, and he slams that front stretch wall.
Yeah, he's done that. He also had some sort of like an oil fitting or something come off 1 year and put him behind the wall. I mean, anything could happen.
A $10 part can take Harvick out of the championship.
Exactly. So we can't ride him into Homestead yet, but... before we go on more about Phoenix, man, I totally forgot. The selfie kid.
How cool was
that? Even though it's kind of getting it's a little bit of the coolness is taken away with this penalty. It's still super cool that Harvick ripped that kid out of the stands and took a selfie on the freaking racetrack with his car. I mean, that's awesome.
I think the kid is a time traveler. I'm from another dimension because there is no way a fan... just out of the blue, can get selfies with all of the people that he got selfies with.
Tell the other part of that, and like, the driver's meeting.
Yeah, like right after that, like it's like, we need to find out who this kid is. This is a really good story. And then the kid's parents is on Twitter, and they said, oh, it's my son, and here's all of our pictures from the weekend.
Come to find out that he took a picture with Rodney Childers before the race.
And poor Rodney, before all of this, he's like, you know... this is divine, the
intervention.
Divine intervention. This kid wouldn't normally, and I don't know how the kid did it. I've been trying to get a selfie with any driver for 20 years, and the kid gets 10 or whatever. It's freaking nuts.
You got one with the man, the legend, Jeff Gordon.
I did. But I had to pay money. I had to pay cash money.
That don't count? Okay. All right.
Well, I guess that you could say Jeff Gordon got a selfie with Joey Logano that day.
Hey, screw you, man. Well, for those of you that don't know, Sokka and I...
We went to Charlotte.
2014?
It was Jeff Gordon's last full-time year.
No.
It was the year before. He's about to announce retirement, few weeks after that.
It was the October race. He announced his...
He had to go pee.
Retirement. No, that was on pit road. You're getting that confused. We went 2 years back to back.
We did.
That was the first year we went.
Boy, Jeff was around a lot.
The second year we went, we did the Jeff Gordon experience, the VIP experience, where you could... meet him and hang out and ask questions.
That was really cool.
It was
a really good
cool.
time. I was the lone D-bag with a Dale Jr. shirt surrounded by... Well, thankfully, Jr. was Gordon's teammate at that time.
Yeah.
Because if this was pre-Hendrick Jr., it's like, I'm a DI spy, man. I'm going to come in and learn all of Jeff Gordon's secrets. But no, Jeff was really accommodating. He said, he's my teammate. Why wouldn't I like a guy who likes Dale Jr.?
Yeah.
So,
class act, man.
Class act.
How could you really be... upset about that. So. Yeah.
But Selfie Kid was tremendous indeed. Good props to that kid. I don't know who he is, but he's got pictures to share for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, fans, now we are welcomed by up-and-coming driver, I guess you could say, Trevor Rizzo. Welcome, Trevor. How you doing tonight?
Good. How are y'all doing?
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What series are you currently racing in and whatnot?
I currently drive an asphalt late model stock at Myrtle Beach Speedway in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, in the NASCAR Lunar All-American Series.
Nice.
It's the national touring, or not national, local series for, late models, modified, stuff like that.
Is it like a NASCAR home track sort of deal?
Yeah, it's sanctioned under the NASCAR home tracks body.
Fantastic. Okay. How long have you been doing that?
I've been racing late models for 3 years, but I've been racing for 11 now.
Ooh, starting young, huh?
Yeah, I started when I was six in a Corps of Midgets up in New Jersey, Wall Stadium, where the Truexes got their start and the Bluets and stuff like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So still relatively young yourself, though, right? What, 16, 17?
Yeah, I just turned 17 in August.
Okay, awesome. So what is that kind of the general age of drivers you're competing against currently, or would you say it's just a mixed bag?
Yeah, right now the late model stock world is kind of a mixed bag. You've got a lot of, you know, late model stock lifers that are, you know, anywhere between 20 and 50. You've got guys like Lee Polian, who are in their, you know, late 20s, I believe. Philip Morris, who is in his 40s. You've got a bunch of kids that are also coming up, you know, this is their step before Canaan and Ark and stuff like that. So it's a pretty mixed bag as far as talent and age.
Awesome. Great.
So as a 16 or 17-year-old kid, you know, what did you get your start practicing with those late models like right away? Is this a family business, or did you like get the racing bug and convince your parents to get you a late model?
It kind of worked out in the sense a mix of both ways. I raced, you know, for about 5 years with my dad. It was just me and him and set up a car together and, you know, just go out for fun almost 30 weeks a year. This is just quarter minutes and champ carts, and we had a blast doing that. My mom would help out and stuff. And when we moved down south to South Carolina, we used to race Bandoleros and Legends cars at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. We got to working with AK Performance, and what kind of happened was that's a family deal. And over the past 5 years, we've been 6 years now, we've become like family with them. And when I was thinking about making the move up to late models, we got to talking with them, and you know, he was looking to expand his program to include late models, and we were, you know, that was probably the next logical step for us in asphalt unless we wanted to make the transition to dirt. So we kind of worked out a deal that will work for both of us, and you know, this way no one's spending too much on their own, and we're kind of working together really well. So it was kind of, I'd always had the racing bug since I was real little, but it was just kind of the next logical progression for the both of us.
Nice. So a good reciprocal relationship with you and your car owner?
Yeah. We own the car, but he really works on it a lot. So it's a back and forth relationship, and it's worked really well over the past 6 years. We've gotten to the point where we can pretty much read each other's minds, because he's my spotter and my crew chief as well as my driver coach.
Oh, nice.
And I've taken up kind of helping some of the newer drivers on the team, because it's a multi-car, multi-series team. They field Legends cars, Bandoleros, late models, limited late models. We're getting into super trucks this next year, I believe.
So oh, wow. It'll be,
you know, a mixed bag of stuff, and it's been a lot of fun. I really like working with them.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So I'm assuming you're still in high school?
Yeah, I'm a senior at Bluffton High School in where I live.
Nice. So how do you juggle that with schoolwork? I gotta ask. That's gotta be a little challenging, maybe, right?
I'm a more academic type student. I'm fourth ranked in my class.
Oh.
I do a lot of clubs and stuff.
Well, nice. Congratulations.
The balance I kind of find is I try to work through all my schoolwork as fast as possible, and then try and do the social media and the marketing stuff. And you know, if you look at my Twitter, most of my tweets are like 9:30, 10 at night, because that's by the time I finish my homework, that's when I can do it.
Right.
So I kind of try to finish my homework as fast as possible.
Cool.
Work on, you know, promote the race team and stuff like that, and then, you know, just see kind of what happens. And, you know, luckily, a lot of people that I've been able to interact with are Midwest type people or West Coast, so, you know, when I'm tweeting at 9:30, 10, they're 7 o'clock, 8.
Right.
So it's not too terribly late, so I'm still reaching the people that I need to reach. But, yeah, it's at points the balance has gotten really hard, especially when my class load gets really, you know, with AP classes and honors classes, when that gets strenuous, I kind of have to take a step back from the social media aspect and just focus on my schoolwork for a couple days. But,
for sure.
It hasn't been too challenging to balance it. It's going to, the next 2 weeks ahead, I have to miss Friday school both weeks to go practice for the Myrtle Beach 250 and the Myrtle Beach 400. So we'll see how that pans out, because I'm going to have to get my work in advance and stuff like that. But so far, I've been able to make it work.
Have your teachers and friends been really supportive of your racing career, or have they said, you know, focus on schoolwork first?
It kind of depends, because, like, my physics teacher I've had since I was a sophomore, and he's really supportive. He'll give me the work in advance and stuff like that. But for, you know, newer teachers that I've had that aren't really used to this routine of me skipping a couple days here and there, they're kind of a little apprehensive about it, because they're not sure if I'll be able to handle all the work and stuff.
They don't get it. They don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't get that.
It's kind of hard to explain how much of a lifestyle
exactly
racing is.
Exactly.
In some aspects, you know, but a lot of my friends have been really supportive, cause especially now, since it's so hard to make it to that upper level of NASCAR. Just to break that bubble between like normal stock and Canaan is almost impossible, just because unless you have some, you know, large financial backing, you're not going to be able to do it yourself.
Absolutely.
So that's right, the point where I'm at right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we wanted to have you on the show. And again, thanks for calling in to us. But actually, it was Gasman, my counterpart, who's not even on the podcast tonight, but he stumbled across you on Twitter and, you know, wanted to bring you on and give you that exposure. That's kind of the one of the things that we've, since we started this podcast earlier in this year, is we're trying to get some limelight, you know, shown on some up-and-comers and whatnot. So tell us about that. I know you're out there searching for sponsorship and trying to break that bubble, as you said. So tell us, I know you've got kind of some sponsorship opportunities, right?
Yeah, all year we've had a really great fan sponsorship deal where it was basically just $1 per race, and we would write your name on the card. If you give us a certain amount, we give you a t-shirt or a pit pass or certain other incentives. We've kind of restructured the program because we redid our body this year, so we're able to do it after the last couple races, so we're able to do it a little bit more professionally. So the deal we have right now is for the Myrtle Beach 250 and 400, which are the two biggest light model stock races in the Carolinas. We're letting fans join the car for $10 for both weekends. $10 total, not each weekend.
Oh wow!
And you know, you always have the option to provide more if you want. And you know, it's hard because we're asking a lot of, you know, family type people, and a lot of them are always willing to give a little bit, but they can't give too much, which is amazing. And we love to see anyone give anything that they can if they feel so inclined to. And we've been really blessed to have a lot of dedicated race fans that want to help us out. Yeah, but basically, it's $10. We'll put your name on the car for two of the biggest exposure weekends that Myrtle Beach has. And then if you give us over $20, we'll send you a t-shirt for free. Over $50, we'll try and get you a pin pass if you're close enough. And then, you know, we're always interacting with fans on Twitter, social media like that. But it's just try and break that next barrier is going to be really
absolutely
hard. We've had a lot of great fan sponsors to help us.
Yeah, unfortunately, the finance aspect is what makes it all work. So, you know, best of luck to you. Obviously, we'll get that out on Twitter and our Facebook page and everything. So, $10 for both races. What are the dates on those races? Do you know off the top of your head?
The Myrtle Beach 250 will be this Saturday.
Okay.
The 10th, and then the Myrtle Beach 400 will be on the 17th, and they're two-day events, really, so we'll do Friday practice, and then there's a race, not on my race, but there's a race on this Friday, and then next week, there's going to be Wheel and Modifieds and the NASCAR Wheel and All-American Series doing a combined feature event. So it gives you a little bit of time to think about if you want to help us out and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Where do we go? Do you have a website, or how do we donate?
We have a website. It's rizzoracing.com, and going back to the balance between school and racing, I haven't had time to update the sponsorship section. There's a bunch of packages there where you can give us, you know, entered amounts of money if you were so inclined. That's on rizzoracing.com, but there's an email form on that website if you wanted to use that. My DMs and Twitter are always open. You can tweet at me on Twitter of @_TrevorRizzo, capital T, capital R, or you can email me at trevor@rizzoracing.com. There's plenty of ways to get in contact with me I check it pretty much constantly because we're in the business of trying to get money right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. And so thanks for throwing those out there. I was going to ask you that at some point. So thank you for throwing out your Twitter and everything. So fans, definitely get out there and donate to Trevor. Help him get where he needs to be. Sokka?
Yeah, I was, as a gamer, I was going to see if there was anything else you did besides race and schoolwork, you know, to let the fans get a personal feel of who Trevor Rizzo is when you're just relaxing or, you know, you're just taking a break. What are you up to?
Oh, I have a lot of extracurricular type things that I do for fun. You know, as a racer, I have the iRacing software or simulator, which is a lot of fun, but, you know, sometimes that gets a little too competitive because, you know,
it's hard.
As much as I love to win and race and stuff like that, if it gets to the point where you're just logging laps and it gets a little tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I'm not racing, I'm the captain of my robotics team at school. I lead a Model UN delegation at school. I do student council work, so I organize events at the school and stuff like that.
Man, you're jack of all trades. AP Bio and everything. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I do. I do 13 clubs. I'm in charge of four. I play a lot of video games. I don't have too much time anymore, so I haven't been able to buy too many newer games. But I play a lot of Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which is a, now that I think about it, like an almost 10-year-old game.
Oh, for sure. I still play NASCAR Racing 2003 season, so old games still hold their weight in water.
Yeah, I mean, we get to the point where, you know, we've been racing for 11 years. I haven't, you know, all my Christmas gifts and every birthday presents were all racing related. So the newest console I have is a PlayStation 2. So every so often I'll load up NASCAR 2006.
Nice.
And play that. That's the year Tony Stewart was on the cover, which is a real long throwback.
Yeah.
And it's the time when...
The first console game to feature Car Tomorrow, and Tony had that Toyota, Home Depot, and I think Walmart even had a Tony Stewart edition for that one, maybe like a championship edition. So
he was still in the Chevy back then, Monte Carlo.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's awesome. So the PS...
Yeah, like I said,
PS2 is the newest console you've got?
Yeah, I mean, you know, most of the stuff that we spend money on is racing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. That's awesome. Yeah, that shows where your priorities are at.
I've got my computer. Yeah, it's always been my number one priority. You know, the last two summers, I worked anywhere between 40 and 60-hour weeks, and all that money has gone to racing.
Absolutely, yep.
You know, I've been dedicated to this sport, and I love it. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a cheap sport, and not everybody can participate. So those that do, unfortunately, you gotta earn it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a sport for the timid. This isn't something you can do if you only want to halfway do it, unless you've got some exorbitant amount of money behind you. You know, if you're from Middle America, you really gotta, you know, work for it, put your blood, sweat, and tears into it, and that's. You know, that's fortunately what my guys at AK Performance are able to do for me, and we're able to make it work. You know, we're able to make do with the best car that we can put out there every single week, and it's been going pretty well.
Do you have an official Facebook page, Trevor? Like a Rizzo Racing Facebook page?
Yeah, I believe it's just Rizzo Racing, LLC. I don't use that too much because the way Facebook accounts work is it you have to log in every single time.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's a little bit more of a hassle, especially when a lot of it's like two-step authentication, so it takes me like 15 minutes to log in every time.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Cool.
I use it occasionally, so I'll check up on it, but it's not as simple as the Twitter that I use. And
sure.
We used to have a team Twitter, but it was basically just me tweeting the same thing on two accounts.
Gotcha.
So I stopped using that, and it's just mostly my Twitter now. And we've, you know, over the past couple of years, we've kind of merged more with AK Performance because, you know, our family's kind of become more as one with their family. And it's been a lot of fun, though, overall. I can't say I'd have any regrets.
Awesome. Well, Trevor,
Before you go, do you have anything that you'd like to tell our fan base? You know, anything to put out there?
Not really. I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity to have me on the show. You know, make sure you check out, even if you can't help us out financially, if you can just share, you know, my tweets and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
That helps out immensely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we're trying to make it to the next level, but you know, even if that's not possible, we're not going to stop trying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was an awesome opportunity. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time, and for us too, we're a very small podcast, and we're, you know, we're putting everything we can into it for sure, just like you, so we can relate. We're kindred spirits.
Yeah, it's and you guys will actually be on the car for the next two races. Gasman came on and emailed me a while ago and asked if we still have space open, and I believe I've got a shirt for one of y'all, and I will be sending y'all a couple free shirts to give one of your listeners.
Awesome, Trevor.
Sounds good.
That is awesome.
For the gas man, make sure it's an extra large, please.
Yeah. So thanks, Trevor. We do appreciate it. We will be sure and get a lot of you know, shares out there on Twitter, Facebook, everything like that, and post it in our subscription or our link here for this episode of the podcast. So appreciate you calling in. And hopefully, you'll get some more of those funds flowing your way.
Yeah, best of your luck in Myrtle Beach, really big race, and good luck in school, too.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. You all have a great night.
You too. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Trevor Rizzo, and man, that kid's got a full plate.
Yeah, he stays busy, man. I don't even know when he has time to sleep.
I was in a fall play my senior year, and that about broke me. But to be in 14 clubs and in charge of four of them and race.
Racing,
I mean,
social life, the homework that comes with all that.
Extremely bright future, man. Honors and everything. You know, if unfortunately racing doesn't pan out to be professional, he's got a great background. He could do anything he wants to do, I think.
Yeah, that sounds like it, man. So, fans, go check out Trevor. Donate if you can. Just, you know, simple $10 donation will go a long way. Plus, you get your names on the cars for 2 weekends there. If you hurry, you can maybe still get on for this weekend.
And I mean, it's for Myrtle Beach. It's a track that Dale Jr. himself said he loved racing on when he was coming up through the ranks. I mean, it's not your mom and pop's backyard racetrack. I mean, it's Myrtle Beach.
Yeah,
it's big.
So we'll post, we'll get some retweets of his account out there on Twitter. So go make sure you go to Wrecking and Racing on Twitter. And hunt those up. We'll also share that info on Facebook if you're on our Facebook page. So,
all right. So, any other Texas news to close out? Any social media tweets or anything from the drivers that you'd like to talk about before we move on to the news for the week?
Yeah. No, I think that's about it, honestly. That's all I've got from Texas. How about you?
That's all I got as well. So we'll move into the news. All right. So what is our first big news? Well, not the biggest, of course, but what are some stories you'd like to talk about?
Well, I saw that McMurray is basically all but guaranteed to be starting the Daytona 500 for a Chip Ganassi car.
Interesting.
But it will not be in the one car.
Right.
Again, this was on JC's website, I think, but they basically said Kurt Busch is still expected to take over that number one
right
car.
I mean, with Jamie being a Daytona 500 champion plate racer, he could get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And that equipment for sure. So, you know, I don't understand what they're waiting on. Well, maybe now that the new other news has dropped, and that being that Cole Pern and Martin Truex Jr. are officially going to Joe Gibbs Racing.
In the 19,
which that kind of not really didn't surprise me, but I was a little disappointed. I really thought maybe they would try to get the 78 and retain that brand identity, but
right.
Apparently not.
No, it's business. I mean, they don't want to lose Truex being a satellite driver, of course. You know, he's got championship provisional and all that other stuff good going for him. And just a bad deal for Suarez, though. You kind of feel bad for him.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm still seeing rumors out there that he's still in talks to go to Haas.
Right.
Or, you know, some other option maybe we don't even know about.
Especially if he brings Aris with him, because I know Aris doubled down saying it's going to be, he's our driver.
Correct.
So, you know, that's good that a driver can take that sponsorship with him, you know, and he's a Xfinity champion. I mean, he knows what he's doing inside a stock car. It's just the opportunities perhaps weren't there.
Yeah. So we'll see what pans out there, but I think that's the big domino everyone was waiting to fall.
Right.
And now that it has, I think once Suarez makes his announcement of where he's going, then I think, or, you know, and it might be a situation where Kurt is just blocking out everything until he gets out of Homestead.
Right.
You know, make sure.
Especially now being only 3 points out of the cutoff.
Make sure we get to Homestead, focus on that race, winning the championship, and then I can announce my plans. Or, you know, if some by miracle of God, he wins the championship, does he keep his spot at Stuart Haas Racing?
I don't know. Like,
You heard Gene Haas saying he needed to win races and championships, then we'll talk.
The opportunity is here.
Yeah. But has he already signed something with Ganassi? We just don't know. I don't know. So we'll find out there.
This is the most intense, silly season I can think about in some time. Usually with the recent retirements of Gordon and Stewart and Junior, it was known pretty well who was going to be taking those spots, but we never had four or five big drivers swapping all over the place in recent memory. I'm sure it's happened before, but I can't think of a time when this many, you know, this much potential is moving all over the place.
Absolutely.
So one, not specifically NASCAR news, but racing news in general, Mary Holman George, the patriarch and emeritus of Indianapolis Motor Speedway, has unfortunately passed away. I don't know how old she was, but...
Like 86.
She lived a pretty long life, and... I was watching a video that the IndyCar Twitter put out, and I don't really know a lot about Mary Holman George. She owns our home track, for crying out loud, but I don't know what she did. But her family purchased Indianapolis when she was 11, and she'd been really hands-on with it ever since. Big animal activist, and even staged a Special Olympics every May at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which I didn't know.
I didn't know that either.
But she did. But as from a NASCAR fan, when I think of Mary Holman George, there is only one thing I think of. I don't remember if it was for a Brickyard or for an Indy. But she had her daughter with her to give the command.
I remember that, yeah.
And Mary Holman George has almost a let's get ready to rumble style of announcing, gentlemen, start your engines, or drivers, start your engines. It is her way, and she hasn't changed it in years. And the one time she brings on her daughter, she just jumps the gun, drivers, start your engines, woo! And she got this look on her face like she would not live to see the next day. She shot fire out of her eyes at her daughter, and it's like...
I do remember that. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Mary Holman George.
Oh, man. Other news. So this company called 2XU, don't know if you've ever heard of them.
I have not.
Is taking over as the official clothing provider for Hendrick Motorsports. So they had a commitment with Under Armour, and I think that expired this year. They signed it back in 2014 and had a four-year run through there. Or 5 year, I think it was. And so that, I think, ends this year. And then they're picking up this 2XU, which is an Australian-based company. So interesting, but a little bit of news there. We'll see if they kind of blow up or...
I mean, NASCAR is all about getting your name out there and sponsoring...
Brand loyalty, exactly.
Brand loyalty. So we'll see if some 2XU-wearing fans are going to be popping up in the stands, I guess.
I'm sure they will, especially, I mean... I'd like to think all NASCAR fans are pretty brand loyal. So I just don't know where you buy it. Like obviously it's going to be in their shops and their haulers and all that stuff, but I've never seen it at other retailers. So I'm sure it'll be making its
appearance. A little bit more prominent.
Yeah. Also, did you see this? You're a big F1 fan, right? Johnson and Alonso. We're going to be doing
again.
A ride
swap. We have a NASCAR driver getting into an open wheel and an open wheeler getting into a stock car, and it's always exciting, even if it is just for show. We had Montoya and Gordon do the seat swap. Then we had Stewart and Hamilton do their seat swap.
Yeah.
Now we've got Johnson and Alonso, like heavy hitters every single time. like Gordon was, you know, champion what, a year or two before that, and Montoya was lighting the world on fire in F1 at the time.
Yeah, he was back with BMW Williams.
And then Stewart was, you know, hitting hard, and Lewis Hamilton is Formula One's like poster child now. Yeah. And now we've got the 7-time Jimmy Johnson and the very spirited Fernando Alonso. Yeah. And that's really exciting. People, of course, are saying, does this mean Fernando's looking to NASCAR? And Jimmy had a pretty good point. He said, look, if Fernando wanted to do stock cars, he would do the seat swap at an oval. We wouldn't be going to his playground. He would be coming to ours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Fernando Alonso will not be a full-time driver in NASCAR, but he might do a road course.
Well,
he might.
The speculation that I had been reading was that he said he made the statement he was interested in doing the Daytona 500. And I think even Lewis Hamilton has said that.
Right.
But everyone, of course, says
it's a crown jewel.
Yeah,
I mean, if Fernando Alonso said, I want to do the Toyota Save Mart 350 and nothing's going to stop me, I think he'd be a little bit more serious. But
guess what? Before you can step into the Daytona 500, you're going to have to do
the duels.
The duels.
You're going to have to learn what stock car racing is.
You're going to have to do the Xfinity race. You're going to have to do an ARCA race. You're going to probably have to do the truck race. You're going to have to go through. I mean, NASCAR's not just going to give you a license for the Daytona 500 when you've never done a speedway race in your life. So
right. I think Danica's transition was ARCA and then Xfinity Nationwide before she could do the Daytona 500. Mm-hmm. So Fernando has a few years. If the Daytona 500 is on his radar, he's got a few years.
If he's going to do anything, he needs to do the Brickyard, because he did Indy 2 years ago.
And we saw Montoya, and Montoya wasn't really an oval racer per se,
but
when it
went
to Indy, he knew it.
Yeah, and Fernando was running in the top three until he had a mechanical failure.
He could have won that race so easily.
So if anything, that's where he needs to go to start, my opinion, but what do I know?
Right. You think crown jewel, and of course Daytona's the biggest, and it's like, well, if Mario Andretti can do it, if I want to prove I'm as good as Mario Andretti and win F1 title and then come and win a Daytona 500, you know, that's sort of the bar you set. But then again, they weren't racing stock cars at Indy when Mario Andretti won the Daytona 500. So
right. They also announced the new Chevy bodies for the Xfinity and Truck Series. They look pretty good. I don't know if you saw.
I did not.
The official images released from Chevrolet, but they look pretty good for 2019. Chevy's got like a new fascia on their cars, so it's reflected in the new Xfinity car for next year. So check that out. And I think that's pretty much all the news I've got. You got anything else for me? I want to recap Texas, the Xfinity race, for just a second.
Oh, go ahead.
Any other news?
I mean, we've got the big ones to talk about, but we sort of touched on them already with the penalty, and then Truex making his final announcement. That's the highlight of the week, I think.
So Xfinity race was Saturday at Texas as well. Big thing there was Christopher Bell spun on lap one, basically turn two, lap one, spun, didn't hit anything, but again, product of that, you know, single groove track and hard tires.
And it put the fear in the Cup drivers when they saw that. They said, Texas is going to be a survival. And Kurt Busch said, Texas is all survival.
Yeah, so we had a record number of cautions in the Xfinity race. We had 13 cautions.
Those are Bristol numbers, man.
I thought that was a fantastic race. And I really thought that was going to translate over to the Cup Series. And you could argue with me one way or the other, but it wasn't quite that outcome. Christopher Bell ended up coming back. He was in the top five. He was competing for the win. He ended up getting wrecked by Austin Cindric. And he was already on the outside looking in as far as the championship. He's one of the championship favorites. I think he's got like 6 wins this season. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely a championship favorite. And he was already looking out by like 4 points. And now he's severely out of it. He's going to have to win Phoenix to advance. Also, Justin Allgaier is on the outside looking in and needs to win Phoenix or have a really good points day to advance the homestead.
Yeah, I saw social media that night that said, what kind of world are we living in when guys with this many wins can't compete for a championship?
Well, that's format.
Yeah, I mean, you've got in playoff format, you have your upsets. The underdogs come to light.
It's, I mean, no different than Keselowski. I mean,
yeah.
great car. He's been competitive. He should have made the round, but you know what? One incident at Talladega, run out of gas, and then Almirola crashed him at Dover, and it's done.
Yep. We could pull the gas man all day long and say, well, averages, averages, averages. If the playoffs weren't here, then we would have this as a champion, but it's just the way it is. We got to play ball.
So the bigger concern that I think everybody in the Xfinity series needs to be worried about is Cole Custer. Cole Custer, basically, he was there consistently in the top 5 and top 10, all of Texas, came and hunted down Tyler Reddick with like one lap to go, beat and banged to the finish line, ended up getting the win. But if you remember last year, he dominated Homestead and won Homestead. He wasn't championship eligible, but now he's a lock for Homestead. I would be very scared if I was any of the other competitors going in, if he's got that same quality of car that he did last year, because nobody could touch him. Mm. And now he's championship eligible. So I think Custer is going to be hard to take down at Homestead.
Interesting.
Even though as good as Allgaier and Bell, even if they both advance, it's going to be hard to take down the 00 car.
Yep. I mean, Stuart Haas has got it going on. They thought Harvick was going to be just as good, I guess, but man.
And some speculation there is if Custer could win the championship, which is totally a possibility, who's to say he doesn't step into the 41, right? His father is part of the operation in Gene Haas's organization. So who's to say we don't all get our minds blown and he steps into the 41 if Kurt leaves?
I tell you.
Because he's been in the Xfinity series, what, 3-4 years?
Something
three
like years? That, yeah.
3 years, I think. They're also rumoring that John Hunter Nemechek is going to go to the 23 GMS car and replace Spencer Gallagher. So nothing official there, but that's the rumor there.
Moving cars, got my mind to a little bit of news, but continue. I'll hold on to it for now.
Only other thing I've really got there is Ross Chastain's rumored to pick up the 42 ride full-time for Xfinity next year, which is
very good.
Good for him, even though I think a lot of fans wanted to see him step into the 9 car when Reddick leaves. I don't know if that's going to happen, but right now the rumor is he's going to the 42.
Well, shoot, he's doing just fine in the 42 as it is with his 3 or 4 starts.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's not hurting himself by joining that car. Oh, but you reminded me, shout out to David Starr, who did not finish dead last in Texas. It's the first start for the
Obica
Okeechobee Racing. And, you know, not so much fanfare. I don't believe they mentioned it once.
No, there wasn't much talk about it at all. And they've actually got a different driver this week.
Oh, who's it this week?
Tanner Berryhill, which he's got some cup starts, if I remember correctly. But
I thought you were going to say Tanner Faust. I'm like, he's getting ready to light up those tires.
Well, he'd probably be a better pick, in my opinion.
Travis Pastrana showed us what an extreme driver can do in stock cars.
Well, yeah, but at least Tanner has some experience driving cars.
Yeah.
Pastrana, he was more of a motorcycle guy, right?
Yeah. Most exciting guy on two wheels, I think.
Nitro Circus. But, yeah, Tanner Berryhill. I don't know why they put him in and took out David Starr, but nonetheless, I think we kind of got the end result there that everyone kind of expected.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
That will be all for me this week. We can talk about Phoenix. We touched on how excited we were about the layout. We could talk about our picks. And I can only do my picks. I don't know if Gasman left his picks behind.
He did. He did. Of course he did.
Yeah.
His pick for Phoenix, I'll go ahead and do his first. He's got Chase as the winner. So he's riding
banking.
Chase. Even though he's got like 3 different, rotating drivers to Homestead outside of Harvick, Busch, and Truex. He's still banking on Chase.
He's holding hard on Chase.
Even though he sold Brad Keselowski there for a while, he's got different versions of his format.
Mm-hmm.
He's banking hard on Chase going. So that's his pick. His dark horse is Erik Jones.
Again, with the Jones.
I had
dark
Jones
horse
last week. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you got?
So Phoenix, I'll say Kyle Busch. I don't know if that was your pick or not.
Nope, nope.
All right, so Kyle Busch is my pick. And, I mean, you guys mentioned him on the podcast last week, and this is sort of his style of racing. And the last time I picked him, he did really well. He'll run neck and no neck.
Newman.
Right beside. I'm going Newman.
You know what? I knew you were going to freaking do that. That's why I didn't pick him, because I knew you were going to pick him.
Newman's my boy.
Yeah. I got, you know, dirt against Newman at Phoenix, because ever since he bumped Larson for that playoff point that he needed to advance, and when it kicked Gordon out, that still puts a bad taste in my mouth. Anywho, my pick is Harvick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, man. He's got eight wins there. Eight wins. You can't tell me he's not going to be going in there with vengeance now after what happened today. My dark horse is going to be William Byron. He finished 12th there in the spring.
I was not counting on Byron.
He had some speed at Texas. He had to start from the back, and then he got swept up in Johnson's slow slide and spin out, whatever that was. But I think I'm going to put my money on Byron and see if he can't get a top 10.
Awesome.
I saw this interesting thing I'm going to bring up here next, if you don't have anything else.
Sure.
On Facebook, someone posted on this group that I follow, NASCAR group. Basically, the rule is simple. Make a statement, and then anybody underneath the statement could put agree or disagree, but you could not argue the statement.
You couldn't quantify. You couldn't gas man this thing.
No. No, you had to agree or disagree. You can't argue it. You just state your opinion in one word. And I like that, because most of the fans abided by it, and some did not.
Gas man,
of course. I don't think Gas man was on there, but so we'll just call this maybe this will be a new segment.
And agree or disagree?
Agree or disagree. We're going to play agree or disagree. I've only got four questions this week.
And you can only agree or disagree?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll look like an idiot here.
Well, here, I mean, on here for, yeah, we can argue our statements on here. But first one, NASCAR should allow or bring back racing back to the caution.
Disagree.
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 I'm going to disagree with your disagree.
I see your disagree, and I'll raise you.
Yeah, I agree. I get the safety aspect of it, but I miss racing back to the caution.
I do too, man. I mean, we still race back to the caution in our weekly series, and it has changed the races
dynamic
that we've done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's there, but you know, it adds an element of surprise or strategy to be the first car one lap down. It really gives those lap down cars something to race for when you know if there's a caution, you don't have to go find the leader. He doesn't have to let you back. And I'm jaded by Jeff Burton at New Hampshire when he didn't give Earnhardt his lap back, and Earnhardt gave him a side full of donuts. That was the race that Burton led all 300.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
But had the freezing under yellow came out, then Earnhardt would have got his lap back, and would be a whole different story.
Yeah. So there's benefits to both sides. The entertainment factor, and then...
Yeah.
Next one, tobacco sponsorship should be allowed back in NASCAR. I'll go first on this one, if you got to think about it.
Sure.
Absolutely agree. The sport needs all the sponsorship it can get. I'm sorry if you smoke or you don't smoke, or you agree with it or you don't, but for the simple reasons we were talking about earlier, money makes the sport go around.
And they're of course chopping out a big wealthy part of, you know, the market. I'll agree. I was thinking agree. I was thinking of all the little kids running around with vaping pens or whatnot, but sure. I mean, if it will help a team survive, then I think that's more beneficial.
Okay. Next one. NASCAR tries to control the outcome of races.
Oh, disagree. What in the world? Why is that even a thing?
You would not believe how many people were... That was the one that everyone was arguing about.
Really?
Well, that one and the next one.
Why were people arguing that NASCAR should manipulate races?
Because people really believe that they do it.
Oh, do they manipulate races, not should they?
No, I didn't say should. NASCAR tries to
NASCAR tries to control
the outcome of races.
I'll agree.
Oh, now we're going. Okay.
I thought it was. So you believe, should they?
You believe? No, not should.
Yeah.
But they try to. It's not. I've not seen. Should they? But do you know?
Yeah, maybe yeah. Not this year, but I've seen some Dale Jr. cautions.
Yeah.
Because I remember thinking as a junior fan, oh crap, he's the first car one lap down. If there was a caution right now, he'd.
And there's the caution.
Yeah, there's the caution. I mean.
You know what? I will say this year, though, they have really cut down.
They've called it straight.
Yes. They've cut down on these mysterious cautions. They'll actually show the debris if there is some.
And I like that.
So I think they took the criticism to heart there.
Yeah,
so
and I'm glad to see.
I disagree.
I'll disagree for this year.
That they've made strides in that department. Yeah. These next two are going to get you rifled. Maybe not this one, but the last one. Competitors should park if you are more than two laps down.
No.
Exactly. No way. Disagree with that. Because Kyle Busch was two laps down this weekend. So they're by essence, they're saying he needs to park once you hit two laps down. Absolutely not, because you could come back from that.
If the car is too damaged, they will park you anyway. There is already a parking
place. There's already a rule on that. So that's a dumb question to ask. Yeah, but
plus, I mean, for Kevin Harvick, and he's running, you know, 35th, if he makes it to 38th over Kurt Busch, who's in 40th, he still makes the championship, and that is a race within a race, and you're taking that away. You're essentially freezing the field and saying, well, you could have made points last year, but now you don't. Park it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. No, they shouldn't park.
Okay. And last one. All right, last one. I kind of chuckled when I saw this, and just because I knew it was going to get everybody's panties twisted. Kyle Busch is a better race car driver than Dale Earnhardt. Agree or disagree? Because while I'm not going to answer this, I'm going to say that there is an argument to be made.
Yeah, I will agree. I think fans of Earnhardt could...
Relate
to Kyle Busch a little bit.
His head's going to explode when he hears your statement there.
I know, but driving style, aggressiveness, never laying back, I think they could be equal. But, I mean, whining. You never heard Earnhardt whining. That's one thing I will say. He'll never say, well, it was the car's fault or it's the team's fault.
It's true. I don't ever remember him.
In fact, the only criticism that I remember Dale Earnhardt saying is when the roof blades... came up and he said Mr. Bill France Sr. would be rolling over his grave if he saw the race today, and that was after Dale Jarrett won the 2000 Daytona 500. And that's really the Earnhardt didn't whine. He put his foot down and NASCAR listened. I don't think NASCAR would listen to Kyle Busch if Kyle Busch had a complaint about the racing or the style. In fact, they fined him for the COT. Because the very first winner of
the
COT,
worst car he'd ever driven.
He wins Bristol. Hey, Kyle, your car looked really good. No, it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes a penalty. So if Earnhardt said that, NASCAR would say, Dale, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
So Busch has not earned the respect. But driving talent, if you started them at the same point in time, give them the same equipment, they would be beating each other's doors off.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would find each other on the racetrack, I think, and take each other out in some fashion. I believe that.
Hard to contest that, yeah.
So, you know, if Kyle Busch hooked up with Richard Childress, would he have won 7 championships? I don't believe so. So I will disagree that Kyle Busch is a better racer than Earnhardt, but if anyone could hang with Earnhardt at the same point in times of their career, I think Kyle could.
Didn't you say earlier that you agreed?
Did I?
You did. You said you agreed at the beginning, and now you said you disagree.
I talked myself out of it. See,
you did. You totally did.
That's the point. I said, when you said you can't defend yourself, I'm going to look like an idiot.
But, all right. Well, we'll say it's a wash. How about that?
Yeah, it's a wash.
But yeah, I'm sure fans are going to get their panties twisted on that. But fans, let us know what you think of our agree or disagree segment there. And answer those questions. Let us know if you agree or disagree. Why? Plead your case. Email us. Message us on Facebook. Tweet us.
Indeed.
Wrecking and Racing.
@gmail.com. Twitter @ Wrecking and Racing. Facebook.com/ Wrecking and Racing. And WreckingandRacing.com.
Sokka, do you have anything else for this episode?
Not for the episode, but so if
I want to say thank you for coming on and taking the place of Gasman for this episode. You're welcome back anytime you
not
know
after
that.
Those comments I just made, I think I just riled the fan base
well,
up.
Well, Gasman's gonna probably punch you the next time he sees you, but you're welcome back anytime. Please do check out Sokka's YouTube channel, especially
the Thursday race.
Thursday races. We do get on a 15-year-old game called NASCAR Racing 2K3 Series, made by Papyrus Racing,
the granddaddy of iRacing. So if you're a fan of iRacing, you'd love this.
Yeah. So basically, we do a weekly race at the same race that the National Cup Series are at each week,
and boy, we race Phoenix. And that was intense.
Yeah.
If the real race is anything like our race at Phoenix, it's going to come down to the wire.
Yeah. So we're doing a true championship season that follows the real schedule.
Real points.
Coincides together. Yeah. Follow new format now. We don't have double cell restarts and all the good stuff because it's a 15-year-old game. And those rules didn't exist then. But damn it.
It's a fun, great game.
It's a fun game. And
it still produces great racing.
And we can't do it with iRacing. So... we'll work with what we've got. So check that out. I'm going to post it as soon as Sokka makes it live tomorrow. I'm going to share it.
Yep, noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. All videos go live.
And I'll give you a little spoiler. Sokka and I have both advanced to Homestead.
Indeed. If you're a fan of mine, you would have already known that already.
Yep. So that video we posted next week, we actually haven't even raced it yet.
We haven't raced Homestead.
So, but that's going to be very
Thursday next week.
Very fun. I can't wait to do that. So check that out. Also check out his other videos. What other games are you,
on Monday series is American Truck Sim, the Oregon DLC, and the Heavy Haul Pack just came out, hauling things like, Chinook helicopters, massive, you know, generators. We're talking 170,000 pounds of hauling across the great state of Oregon. Tuesday is Motorsport Manager, and I've just started a brand new season in Motorsport Manager, racing the International GT. So if you're a grand touring car road race fan, definitely check it out. Wednesdays is Europa Universalis, where I try to take over the world as Great Britain, and we are colonizing Biloxi, Mississippi, and fighting off the Holy Roman Empire. And Fridays is Kingdom Come Deliverance, medieval times role-playing game. If you're a fan of knights and knights, medieval Europe, squires, all that good stuff, check it out.
You sound just as busy as Trevor.
It keeps him busy. And this is working 56-hour work weeks on top of that.
Nice. Well, again, thank you for coming on. Fans, check out his channel. Do you want to plug that again? How you spell it?
YouTube.com/Sokka Kino Risa Games, SAKAKINO. RISA GAMES, Sokka Kino Risa Games. Or you can search in our 2003 Menx mod 2018 and catch my channel that way.
Perfect. So fans, again, thanks for tuning in this weekend. Again, reach out to us, tweet us, message us, email us, whatever floats your boat. Mr. Gasman should be back next week. But again, Sokka, thanks for coming on. You're welcome anytime.
And next week is it for you guys as far as the season that the week after. You'll do a season recap, I imagine.
We'll recap Homestead the Wednesday after, yeah. But we're going to continue to have weekly episodes. They might be a little bit shorter as the content, you know, we're not going to have that much on-track topics to discuss. But we'll still have our podcasts and create some sort of content to talk about, of course. So
stay tuned in the off-season.
Yep. So thanks again, fans, and have a good week.
And the checkered flag waves on this episode. Tune in next week to keep updated on all things NASCAR. Please like us on iTunes and follow us on Podbean. We'd like to hear from you, so reach out to us too at wreckingandracing@gmail.com. Thanks again, and see you soon.